Welcome back, everyone. Today we're going deep on the grace of giving, as Dr. Adewuya unpacked it in his lecture on 2 Corinthians chapter 8.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating look at generosity in the early church.
It's about way more than just money, though, right?
Oh, absolutely. It gets to the heart of what it meant to be a follower of Christ in those early communities.
So we're talking about Paul's letter to the Corinthians, right?
Yeah.
Specifically about this call for a financial collection to help the struggling church in Jerusalem.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting how Paul approached this. He could have just issued a command. I mean, he had the authority to do that.
Yeah, he was like the OG church leader.
Exactly. But instead, he chose to appeal to their sense of shared faith, their love for one another.
Okay, so he's trying to inspire them, not order them around.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the ways he does this is by bringing up this incredibly compelling example of the Macedonians.
The Macedonians. Remind me who they were again.
So these were believers in another region, and they were facing, like, intense persecution and extreme poverty.
Wow.
Like, really tough circumstances. But get this. They gave with overflowing joy and generosity, even beyond their means.
That's wild. It kind of blows your mind a little bit, you know? Like, what motivated them to be so generous when they were going through so much themselves?
Right. That's a great question. Dr. Adewuya suggests that their joy might stem from their understanding of the gospel itself.
Interesting.
You see, they were relatively new converts to Christianity, still kind of buzzing from that liberation and hope that comes with finding a new faith.
Oh, I see.
So their generosity wasn't about guilt or pressure. It was a genuine outpouring of love and gratitude for what they had received.
So it was almost like a celebration of their newfound faith. Like, look what God has done for us. We got to share this joy with others, even if we're struggling ourselves.
Yes, exactly. And that's what makes their example so powerful for the Corinthians.
Yeah, I see that.
Paul is subtly saying, look, if these folks facing such hardship can be this joyful in their giving, surely you, with your relative comfort and stability, can find it in your hearts to give as well.
It's like he's using social proof almost. Like,
yeah.
Hey, everyone else is doing it. You don't want to be left out.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a great way to put it, but in a really positive and inspiring way.
For sure.
And remember, the Corinthians, they prided themselves on being like a leading church in the faith.
Right.
Paul knew that. He was subtly tapping into their desire to excel, not just in spiritual gifts, but also in generosity.
It's smart.
It is.
It's interesting how Paul strategically appeals to their values and aspirations instead of just like laying down the law.
Oh, for sure. And that's where this idea of deliberative rhetoric comes
in. Deliberative rhetoric. That sounds fancy.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Dr. Adewuya highlighted this term. Basically, it means Paul was a master of persuasion.
He knew how to work a crowd.
He did. He knew how to win people over, not through force, but through carefully crafted arguments and examples.
So instead of a command, it's more like, hey, think about this. Consider this perspective.
Exactly. And if you look closely at the text, you can see him using all these techniques, asking rhetorical questions, appealing to their shared values, drawing these emotional connections.
Wow, that's subtle. But I guess it was effective, given how much the early church relied on these collections.
Right. But there's more to this than just persuasion tactics.
Oh, I'm intrigued. What else is going on here?
Well, Paul's ultimate argument, his real trump card, hinges on the example of Christ's sacrifice.
Okay, bring on the big guns.
He says, and I'm paraphrasing here, for you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that you, by his poverty, might become rich.
Whoa, that's powerful. But how does that tie into giving specifically?
He's making this incredible connection between Christ emptying himself for our sake and our willingness to empty ourselves for the sake of others.
Oh, wow.
It's about recognizing the huge gift we've received in Christ and responding with a similar spirit of generosity.
So it's not just about money. It's about reflecting the love and selflessness that Christ embodied.
Exactly. And notice how personal Paul makes it. He's not talking about some abstract theological concept. He's reminding them that Christ became poor for them. It was a personal act of love directed at each of them.
That definitely adds a whole other level to it. It's like, how can you not be moved by that?
It's a challenge, right?
Right.
It makes you ask yourself, how does understanding Christ's sacrifice as a gift change my perspective on giving? If I truly grasp what he did, how can I not be inspired to give generously in return? And not just financially, but in every aspect of my life.
It's a lot to think about, and I love how Paul doesn't just leave it at an emotional appeal.
Oh, yeah, he's about to get practical.
He's going to lay down the how-to.
We got it. He actually gets into the nitty-gritty of giving. It's not just this grand gesture. It's about the details, too.
Should be good. So Paul's about to give us the rundown on how this whole giving thing works in real life.
Right. And it's not about pressure or guilt-tripping anyone.
No arm-twisting allowed.
Nope. He's super clear about that. It's all about giving willingly and according to what you can actually afford.
Okay, so no maxing out the credit card for Jesus.
Definitely not. And this brings us to a point Dr. Eduwoye really hit on, this idea of accountability.
Accountability, huh?
Yeah, especially when you're dealing with money meant for the church or any ministry, really.
Makes sense. It's important to be transparent about where the money's going.
Right, and Paul doesn't shy away from that at all. He actually gets pretty specific about how this whole collection process is going to be managed.
Oh, yeah. He even mentions sending multiple people to oversee the funds and stresses, doing what's right, not just in God's eyes, but also in the eyes of other people. Like, he's trying to avoid even the slightest hint of anything shady.
Exactly. You know, even back then, in the early church, there was always the potential for someone to misuse funds.
Yeah, you're dealing with human beings after all.
Right. These were brand new communities figuring things out as they went along. So Paul was wise to realize that handling money especially requires an extra level of care and openness.
Yeah, it's like that saying, trust but verify.
Exactly. And it makes you think about those scandals we see sometimes, even in ministries, that start with good intentions.
Yeah, sadly it happens. It's a reminder that transparency is crucial if you want to build trust, especially when you're asking people to be generous.
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Dr. Eduwoye actually compared it to the world of investing.
Investing. Okay, interesting analogy.
Think about it. If a financial advisor was managing your money with zero transparency, you'd probably be a little hesitant to trust them, right?
Oh, for sure. I'd want to know exactly where my money's going and what it's being used for.
Exactly. And it's the same principle when it comes to giving to a church or a ministry. People want to know that their contributions are being used responsibly and ethically.
So it's not enough to just have good intentions. You got to have the systems in place to back it up.
You got it. And Paul totally models that in this letter to the Corinthians.
It's like he's establishing a precedent for financial accountability in the early church.
Right. And that precedent is still relevant today, whether you're talking about a church, a nonprofit, or even a business for that matter.
So checks and balances, clear communication about how the money's being used, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's interesting how Paul involves the Corinthians in this process.
Yeah.
He doesn't just say, trust me, I'll handle it.
Right. He actually sends trusted representatives from their own community to go with Titus to Jerusalem.
Exactly. It gives the Corinthians a sense of ownership. They know that their people are there to make sure everything's above board.
It's brilliant. It builds trust and avoids any suspicion of wrongdoing.
And it also protects Paul from any accusations.
Yeah.
You know, he's being completely transparent, showing that he's got nothing to hide.
It's like that quote, sunlight is the best disinfectant. Transparency prevents corruption or even the perception of it.
Love that analogy. And that's what's so powerful about Paul's approach. He's setting a standard for ethical financial stewardship that we can still learn from today.
It's about going beyond the bare minimum, you know, really striving to earn that trust through honesty and accountability.
Yes. And speaking of setting an example, there's another fascinating detail that Dr. Eduwoye brought up.
Okay, lay it on me.
Paul actually chose not to take any financial support from the Corinthians himself.
Really? Why not? Wasn't it common for apostles to receive support from the churches they were serving?
It was, but Paul had his reasons.
Oh, there's always a method to Paul's madness.
Right. Dr. Eduwoye explained that accepting their money would put Paul in a socially inferior position, like he was beholden to them.
Interesting. So it was about maintaining his independence and authority as an apostle.
Exactly. He didn't want even a hint of personal gain or self-interest attached to this collection for Jerusalem.
It was all about the bigger picture, the well-being of the whole church, not just his own comfort.
Right. He knew that his actions, especially when it came to something as sensitive as finances, would be under a microscope. So by refusing their financial support, he demonstrated that his motives were pure, that his heart was totally focused on serving God and building up the church.
It's a powerful reminder that true leadership isn't about power or prestige, but about putting others first, about humility and selflessness.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And that leads us to a point that we'll unpack further in the last part of our deep dive today. This idea that the grace of giving goes way beyond just finances. It's about giving of ourselves fully, just like Christ gave himself for us.
We've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive, haven't we? The Macedonian example, Paul's persuasive strategies, that whole emphasis on accountability. It's clear this idea of the grace of giving goes pretty deep.
Yeah, it's definitely more than just a surface-level concept. And, you know, Dr. Aduye reminded us that while we've been focusing a lot on the financial side of things, Paul's message goes way beyond just money.
Right. It's about the heart behind the gift. It's about really giving of ourselves to the Lord and letting that overflow into everything we do.
Exactly. It's like, remember the Corinthians, they were known for their eloquence, their spiritual gifts, their knowledge, all that stuff. But Paul challenged them to excel in generosity, too. Like, make it a central part of who they were as a community.
So it's like aligning your actions with your beliefs, right? If you're claiming to follow Christ, who embodied selflessness and sacrifice, your giving in every area of life should reflect that.
Exactly. And it's not about hitting some quota or checking off a box. Mm-hmm. Dr. Aduye was very clear about that true generosity flows from a heart that's overflowing with gratitude for the grace we've received.
Yeah.
It's a response, not an obligation.
Yeah, that makes sense. I've definitely had those times where I've given out of a sense of obligation. You know, like I had to do it and it always feels so empty, almost transactional. But when I give freely and joyfully from the heart, it's totally different. It's like my heart expands instead of contracts.
I love that. That's a great way to put it. And that's exactly the kind of transformation Paul's hoping for in the Corinthians. He wants their giving to be an expression of their love for God and their fellow believers, not a chore or a burden.
So how does this idea of the grace of giving play out practically? Beyond finances, how can we cultivate that kind of generous heart in everyday life?
That's the big question, isn't it? Dr. Aduye really challenged us to think about that. He pointed out that generosity can look like so many different things. It's about being tuned in to the needs around us and responding with an open heart and open hands.
So it could be something like lending a listening ear to a friend who's struggling, or volunteering at a local charity, or even just using our talents and skills to help someone out.
Exactly. And it doesn't have to be some huge grand gesture. It's about those everyday moments where we can make a difference no matter how small.
It's like shifting your mindset from scarcity to abundance, right? Recognizing that we've been blessed not to hoard those blessings, but to share them freely with others.
And that brings us back full circle to that beautiful example of the Macedonians. Remember, despite their poverty, they found a way to give generously because their hearts were just overflowing with joy and gratitude. They understood that true wealth isn't about how much stuff you have. It's about the richness of relationships and the joy of giving.
Yeah, their example reminds me that generosity isn't about what we have, but who we are. It's about reflecting the character of Christ and how we live our lives every single day.
Beautifully said. And I think that's a perfect takeaway from our deep dive today.
Yeah.
This idea of the grace of giving. It's not about a one-time donation or some grand gesture. It's a way of life. It's about cultivating a heart of generosity that touches every part of who we are.
It's like recognizing that we've been given an incredible gift, this gift of grace, and then turning around and sharing that same spirit of love and generosity with others.
And who knows, maybe if enough of us embrace this way of life, we can help create a world where generosity is the norm, not the exception. A world where we see each other not as competitors for scarce resources, but as partners on this journey of abundance and grace.
That's a powerful thought to end on. Thanks for joining us today on this deep dive into the grace of giving. We hope you've gained some new insights and maybe even feel inspired to think differently about how you approach generosity in your own life. Until next time, keep seeking knowledge, keep asking questions, and keep diving deep.